In the fall of 2000, I was asked to introduce President Bill Clinton in a Rose Garden ceremony regarding a school construction funding bill being introduced in Congress. What an honor. Except I was deeply disappointed in him as a president and as a person and as a gentleman. When we admire someone, often we ascribe godlike characteristics to them, like compassion, bravery, wisdom, benevolence. In fact, if you think of it, most of us had at one time a view of God as a man. Superhuman, of course, but with all of the best qualities, the brightest qualities, the utmost developed qualities of mankind. The term is anthropomorphic. We mentally created a God in humankind's image and with human attributes. We externalize the perfect idea of a fully formed and perfected human. In psychology, the term for this construction is an archetype, which is a collectively inherited unconscious idea, pattern of thought, image, etc., that is universally present in individual psyches. It's the God archetype. For many of us here in this sanctuary, now our idea of divinity, of God, is not limited to that narrow archetype, but is more expansive, more complicated, and nuanced. Nevertheless, for many of us, or maybe most of us, the challenge is to give meaning to our existence without that narrow idea of God and the purpose the archetype compels. There is a hypothesis that we have at least one God gene. It's VMAT2, called vascular monoamine transporter 2. That predisposes humans to mystical or spiritual experiences. Dean Hammer, a geneticist, discovered the gene's involvement in regulating the levels of the brain chemicals serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. These monoamine transmitters are in turn postulated to play an important role in regulating the brain activities associated with mystical beliefs, self-forgetfulness, and a feeling of connectedness to a larger universe. Most of us have a cultural idea of a highly evolved role model, the God archetype. And most of us have the probable genetic wiring to experience mystical or transcendent moments, just as the earliest Unitarians proposed. Unitarian Universalists have long believed that individuals have the ability to experience the divine for themselves without the intervention of a priest, bishop, or other intermediary. The deep history of Unitarian Universalism placed the experience and knowledge of divinity with the individual, contrary to the historical teachings of the Catholic Church of the first centuries AD. And now modern science seems to support those teachings. I did not think Bill Clinton was godlike, but I did have an idea of how a fully formed and evolved human should conduct themselves, and an idea of how a president should behave. In my estimation, Bill Clinton was deeply flawed and had disappointed me greatly. In Genesis 3, verses 4 to 5, "And the serpent said unto the woman, Eve, you shall not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as God, knowing good and evil." Humankind, since the Garden of Eden, has known good and evil, like God does. It is that small voice in your head, your conscience, your moral compass that guides you. It's what makes you a real boy, says Jiminy Cricket. That moral compass that urges us to make better decisions, to have empathy, the inner voice that pushes us on our moral development to be a better person. It is the voice of divinity and all of us that, if we take the time to hear, is always with us. Why don't we act on that inner voice? Maybe it's too hard. Maybe it will cost us somehow. Maybe there are risks to our safety. Maybe we think it won't matter because we are just one person. This inner struggle with morality, to really listen to it, and how to exercise it in our daily lives, is where our spirituality is used and deepened. This push and pull is where we grow morally and spiritually. It is the ever ongoing journey to bring purpose into our lives that propels us to be more moral. Our quick judgment of people, our unexamined biases, limit our ability to hear this inner voice, this compassion. Our unwillingness to examine our motives and drives, it hinders our connection to that voice. The complexity and richness of the human experience is diminished when we refuse to hear it. My inner voice told me that I should decline the invitation to introduce Clinton. I thought I should take a stand and not have anything to do with him. Morally, I felt his behavior repugnant. We are currently living through times where we wish some leaders would take the action that we feel is obvious, would listen to their inner conscience and heed it. We have NFL players listening to their inner voice and kneeling. But there is always the community, the tribe, to think about, usually before action. How will my actions affect my community? Will it help, be neutral, or hurt? Is this just a personal stand, or does it have wider implications? What makes us listen to that voice and then act? What happens if your tribe or community has a different ethos than you? Say your family or church thinks it's disrespectful to kneel during the national anthem, yet you find it a powerful way to bring attention in a respectful way to a national issue. Are you willing to kneel? Are you going to chide and deride others that feel that this is the only way to be heard? Would you be willing to kneel in solidarity? John F. Kennedy said, "A man or woman does what they must, in spite of personal consequences, in spite of obstacles and dangers and pressures. And that is the basis of all human morality." This space between what your conscience tells you to do and what your tribe wants and what you finally do is the place where the moral arc of the universe begins. Without sit-ins, bus boycotts, and peaceful demonstrations, where would we be today? Without American revolutionaries, suffragettes, and peace activists, what would our country be like? I knew a lot about school funding from being a parent with three children in public schools and volunteering in those schools. I know what it was like in a relatively affluent area with an explosive population growth. I could only imagine the problems in less wealthy school districts. Could I have a hand in some small way by speaking in a wide public forum about lack of school resources while introducing Clinton to push this funding bill along? Categorical labeling is a tool that comes to humans from our pre-human ancestors. It helped us to make short work of assessing the risks in our environment, where we had to act fast to survive. We used it to resolve the impossible complexity of the environments we grappled to perceive. In modern, safer times, like so many human faculties, it's adaptive and miraculous. But it also contributes to some of the deepest problems that face our species. What do we do with these human defense mechanisms that we inherited from the great apes? These mechanisms served a purpose in our human development, and yet they are a challenge now. We have the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That is the challenge to placing people into the other category, the one that does not accord the same respect or rights that you would desire for yourselves. In the 1930s, linguist Benjamin Whorft designed some tests to study the cognitive effects of labeling. From his work, he proposed the linguistic relativity hypothesis. According to this thesis, he argues the words we use to describe what we see actually determines what we see. So if I describe someone as short, you will think of them as short first. Some of my first discriminators. If I call them a fascist, then that is what you will look for first also. I am uncomfortable when I'm labeled a libertard, which is a contemptuous term for a person with left-wing political views. I know that is the point. I am uncomfortable with being labeled old, yet I use it to describe myself anyway. When my husband and I first met, we argued, of course, and we argued over socialism. I thought he was a socialist, and he thought I was a rampant capitalist. We are all complicated human beings. We are always more than the labels and less too. And when we use them unthinkingly or offhand, it denigrates the complex nature of the people being labeled, and it perpetuates the stereotype. It is a primitive, proto-human defense mechanism. People are more than their mistakes. Some people's mistakes are far more visible than others because of their notoriety. And we use those mistakes to label. We have to remember that they are more than their label, lecherous or decorous, chaste or lewd. I reflect back on that time when I was trying to decide what to do with the Clinton White House request. What I learned and what my family learned may not be exactly what I would have expected at the time. At the time, it felt very black and white. Would I do it or not? Life and the people we encounter on our journey, though, are not simple and not easy. People are not just this or that, but some of this and some of that. Our reaction to the various people and challenge they present is composed of a bit of instinct, a bit of reason, a bit of compassion. Law and ethics instruct us what to do. Empathy and compassion say something else. Instinct would have us act another way entirely. And in that area in between, that gray area, is the challenge. The gray area where you have to check your instincts, listen to your inner voice, and use compassion and empathy And finally, your powers of reason to make a difficult moral decision. It isn't easy, and oftentimes it will haunt you for a long time. But this is where the arc of the moral universe begins, before it stretches and expands into the future towards justice. Morality is not just a topic in psychology, but one of the four basic foundational pillars that drive our spirituality. What is the meaning or purpose to life? Where did humans come from? How do we know right from wrong? And what happens when we die? These four great questions, these foundational pillars of belief, give purpose to our conception of the meaning of life. Steven Pinker says, striving for moral goodness is what gives each of us the sense that we are worthy human beings. Modern philosophers like Kant, Spear, and Hegel consider the moral development and improvement of humans as the supreme goal of human evolution. As I was trying to decide if I could, in good conscience, have anything to do with the Clinton White House, I thought more than anything that I was trying to teach my children that we are often called to do hard things, both morally and skill-wise. Should I refuse to introduce Bill Clinton because of the way he treated Monica Lewinsky and his wife and his subsequent lies? Or should I agree with the hope of helping more children get more school funding? I struggled with myself. Deny Clinton all the good that I thought he had done as president because of how repugnant to me his behavior in this instant was? Did this one aspect of his personality totally define him? Where does my empathy and compassion lie here? If I have compassion and empathy for Monica Lewinsky, can I still have compassion for Clinton? Did it really matter what I did or thought? After all, I am just one person. What is the right action to take? After all this time, especially knowing that the education bill failed, what mattered was me. What I thought and agonized over. Did I help the arc of the moral universe expand long ago? Maybe a little. But maybe in the years since? I have thought about this episode as I've waded again into that gray area with other moral challenges, learning that oft time there is no easy answer, but in that difficult searching is definitely where your spirituality grows. Spirituality is not a steady state. It is dynamic and active. It can challenge your courage. It is hard. And so, when we are in the in-between, on our way from the intolerable to the unknown, when we define the categories that small minds invent and dare to imagine something beyond, when we seek others who are on our journey, on a threshold, on the margins, in any of the shimmering intersections of our lives, when we listen to the possibilities wrapped and whispered within and stepped into mystery with trust, with fear, with trembling, may we find peace, for we are all connected in that sacred space. May the moral arc of the universe bend ever onward toward a more just world, and may it start with you. Blessed be.